agenda, and most are re-referrals from other committees. As we did on Monday, we will be coming back for a 6 p.m. meeting for those bills we do not finish by 3 o'clock today. Also, if you all could, please remember to keep and return all the materials for the bills that we do not go through this afternoon in your packets. That'll help us out for this evening. We're going to get started here with the first item on the agenda, Senate File 1933, Senator Hand. It's the Health Care Compact. This bill came to us from the Committee on Health and Human Services. Welcome, Senator Hand. And before we get started, I'd like to ask counsel, Ms. James, if she could state what our jurisdiction is on this particular bill.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate File 1933 is before this committee because it creates a health care commission. That starts on line 3.28.
Okay, it starts on line 3.28. I believe that would be under Article 6. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, and I appreciate your taking us up, and we will try to be brief. We did have last evening in the Health and Human Services Committee a lengthy discussion about the issues more generally with respect to the health care compact bill you have before us. I would like to, before we focus on the Article 6, which is in your jurisdiction, just make sure people understand generally what this bill does. And it creates or proposes to create a compact, which is an interstate agreement, a formal agreement between two or more states. And these compact agreements have the characteristics of statutory laws and also some contractual structure as well. There are a number of compacts that the state of Minnesota participates in, a few that you may have heard of. Certainly the Great Lakes Compact is one. I think there's also a Juvenile Justice Compact. I think in total we have, I don't know, a couple of dozen compacts that Minnesota is already a member of. These are things that are authorized under the federal Constitution. They do require congressional approval before they take effect. So what this mechanism does is it creates an agreement that whereby the state of Minnesota agrees to participate in such a compact, and then it asks that the member states, the other states, all the states who've agreed to this, to petition the federal Congress for adoption of the compact structure. The actual effect of the compact is it allows states to, in effect, get a block grant of federal dollars for health care that are then spent and governed under state law rather than federal law. And remember, this only occurs with the consent of the Congress. So, in effect, what Congress is saying, federal law will be that for states, member states of the compact, that we will say that state laws will govern the spending of health care dollars, not federal law. That's what the effect of the compact does. There are four states currently that are members: Georgia, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Texas. Two other states recently have adopted the compact: Indiana and Utah. And those are waiting for the signature of the governor. There is a national organization that is trying to encourage more states to adopt the compact language, and when there is a sufficient number, then the petition to Congress will be made. The particular article that is the jurisdiction of this committee, Article 6, is a feature of the bill that calls for the creation of an interstate advisory commission in which member states, members who are in the compact, would then delegate representatives to serve in this commission. This commission is advisory in nature. It has no governing authority over member states.
Senator Hand, I just want to make note that we do have a quorum at this time.
Thank you. So the returning to the advisory commission does have all the member states, members of the compact, and members selected individuals to serve in this commission. This commission does not have governing authority over any member state. This commission does not supersede state law, does not replace state law, does not have the power to compel any member state to do anything. It is simply there to be a forum and a way for member states in the commission to have an opportunity to share information about the health care decisions, health care policies and practices that are in each individual state, with the hope that that will encourage sort of cross-pollination of ideas among member states who are operating under state law with respect to health care. It is also funded by member states as agreed to by member states. So, again, there is no outside authority that would be compelling the state of Minnesota, if we were a member, to contribute any money. It would be up to us to do that. And so it is. That is the nature of it, and certainly would be prepared to answer questions. I do have Dan Tripp here, who is a member of the national organization that was formed to create the assistance to states as they look at adopting health care compact language, and I'd like to invite him to come up, and he may have better answers than I may have on the detail of some of the things that you may have questions on.
All right. Any questions of Senator Hand or Mr. Tripp? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess with just relative to the commission, because that's what we're focusing on, would there be at some point a cost to the state? I know that's the Finance Committee's purview, but with this commission, would there be a cost if it's adopted and then congressional approval given and then they start to do their work? Would there be some cost to the state?
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Carlson, there could potentially be a cost, as I understand it, and maybe Mr. Tripp can answer more concisely, but as I understand it, there would only be a cost if the state agreed to contribute some cost to the operating of the commission, and maybe Mr. Tripp can amplify on that.
That's correct. There's no set.
Please state your name first for the record. Thank
Dan
you.
Dan Tripp. I'm National Field Director for the Healthcare Compact Alliance. There's no set schematic set up for the commission other than the membership. I would presume as the members join the compact and they set the agenda, that's what would drive the cost. But right now there's no set bureaucracy or anything.
Senator Hand.
And Mr. Chairman and members, to that question, if you look in Article 6, Paragraph E, is where it really addresses that, where it says that the that this is funded by member states as agreed to by member states.
Further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wager. Yes,
Senator Hand, do you have any idea what the projected cost might be?
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wager, as I said, it could be zero. If we became a member of the compact and we did not want to spend any money on the commission, then there would be no money spent. I think the monies would be monies that would facilitate the meetings or the discussions of whatever the compact commission might want to do. There was no fiscal note attached to this bill. There is no cost projected in the bill because there is none that is required in the bill.
All right, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 1933 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Hand.
And members.
Next item on the agenda is Senate File 2042, Senator Dames. Wetland Conservation Act modifications. This bill was referred to us from the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. And, Council, could you walk us through what we are looking at?
Mr. Chair and members, this bill is before this committee because it involves rulemaking on page 7, beginning at line 14.
All right, so we're going to be looking at page 7, beginning at line 714 through 723, it appears here. Welcome, Senator Dames. You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is Senate File number 2042, and we get to rulemaking section 4. And what this is allowing is section 4 deals with allowing the state and the federal government to work together to allow for the coordination for state and federal programs with the goal of making the applying the application for permits and the administration for permits, making those more efficient for the landowners and the project administrators to receive from the various groups. So what it amounts to is we'd be eliminating the number of organizations that the folks would have to apply for to get these permits, making it more cost efficient, and that's kind of what this language refers to. Also, On 7.22 and 7.3, it makes it very plain that these rules may not be more restrictive than the programs under Section 404 or state law. So it doesn't allow the state nor the federal government to just run away with the rules. There are some limits as to the rules, but it does allow them to work together to make it better for the landowner and the project administrators to get their permits.
All right. Thank you very much. Would you like to testify, Mr. Jansky?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Jasky, Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources. Senator Dames described this section clearly. This is not an agency bill, but we do support this section. It can put forth an opportunity in the future to align the federal and state and local roles in wetland protection and end up with, at some point, a more straightforward and simple decision for individual landowners and project sponsors. And as Senator Dames noted, we currently have rulemaking authority on this, so this is just simply adding this provision into that already existing authority.
All right. Questions for a testifier or Senator Dames? Senator Daley?
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 2042 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Is Senator Cruz here? He's not. Let's move on with Senator Brown. Would you be ready?
My testifiers are back yet.
Okay.
Go for it. Are you ready?
Whatever they are.
They're on their way to get Senator Roebling. And here she is. Just want to let folks in the audience know there's, I don't know how many committees going, but you know, we're at the end of this first deadline, so we're running back and forth. Appreciate your patience. Welcome, Senator Roebling. This is the third item on the agenda, Senate File 1921, Abortion Clinic, Health Center, or Facility Licensure Requirements, Fee and Deposit Requirements. The bill was first in the Committee on Health and Human Services, but was referred to us after passing through the Committee on Judiciaries. Ms. James, could you briefly state what our jurisdiction is on the bill?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, on line 18, I'm looking at the second engrossment. Lines 17 through 18 on page 1, the Commission of Health is authorized to adopt rules.
All right, so we're looking at line 1.18 under section 2, subdivision 1. To that, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The purpose of Senate File 1921 is to ensure that clinics that provide abortions provide safe environments for the women. And in order to do that, we are asking the Department of Health to put together rules that would include inspections of the clinics as well as standard operating procedures. Currently, there are some clinics that voluntarily use guidelines endorsed by the National Abortion Federation, and you know, they're completely voluntary, so we don't know if they're used for sure or not. But there's also no inspections for these clinics. And so the rulemaking would involve development of rules concerning patient health and safety. They would include requirements for infection control, staff qualifications and training, anesthesia procedure, disposal of biologic materials, patient rights, the physical plant, sanitary environment, and reportable diseases. We are having some discussion with the Department of Health. They have classified this as a major rule, and therefore it has a fairly hefty price tag on it, $286,000, which I'm sure we'll be addressing in the Finance Committee where this goes next. But our proposal would be that the rules for this particular license would be very similar to those for ambulatory surgical centers, which are currently licensed and regulated by the State Health Department. And they are assuming that they would conduct investigations on complaints, of course, but also that there would be an annual inspection and complaint investigation activities for approximately 8 providers in the state. And so it is about the development of those rules, and as I said, we believe that there is a prototype already available that they could be using.
All right, questions for Senator Roebling. Senator Goodwin.
I have an oral amendment. Do you want to take it now?
Yes.
Okay. In the heading, after performs abortions, add.
What or, line? Excuse me.
In the
line?
Heading. In the heading. A bill for an act.
Okay. All right.
After abortions, put or vasectomies. And then on line 1.9, after abortion, put and vasectomy. And then on 111, after abortions, put or vasectomies. On line 113, after abortions, put and vasectomies. Line 114, after abortions, put or vasectomies. Line 1.17, after abortions, put and clinic, health center, or facility that performs vasectomies. And then on line 1.24, after abortion, put or vasectomy. And I think that the same issues that rules will have to be made up for this abortion clinic licensure should probably have to be made up for vasectomies as well, because the kinds of things that Senator Roebling talked about, patient health and safety, disposal of medical materials, and reportable diseases, all those things are also true when a vasectomy is performed. And I'm sure that many of us know of people that have had serious infections after a vasectomy. So that's my amendment, and I'd like a roll call vote.
Senator Roebling.
Well, this is something new, and I don't know if Senator Goodwin has information about whether or not there are vasectomy clinics that pretty much exclusively do that, or if most of them are done at hospitals or if they're done in surgical centers that are licensed. I guess I don't know much about where vasectomies are performed.
Counsel, does this conform? Does this work, the amendment that...
Mr. Chair and members, it appears to me that it conforms.
Okay. All right. Further discussion on the amendment?
Well, Mr. Chair, I believe this really changes the scope of the bill. You know, this is pretty narrowly defined, and we are in here to talk about rulemaking. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, do any of the clinics that perform abortions also perform vasectomies?
Senator Roebling?
Maybe Senator Goodwin would know that.
Senator Goodwin?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, I'm sure there are clinics that perform both. And as to Senator Roebling's point about clinic, or the her bill covers clinics, health centers, or other facilities, and on the issue of abortion, so I don't see any problem with adding or vasectomies. And yes, they are done in clinics. They're not done in hospitals. For the most part, they're done in clinics.
Well, Mr. Chair, if they were done in clinics that also perform abortions, then this would cover them automatically because they'd be licensed and inspected.
Well, yeah, and Mr. Chair, if they're done,
Senator Olson.
If they're done in ordinary clinics, those are already in license inspected. The issue is that the ones that are doing abortions are not necessarily inspected and licensed. Is that not correct, Senator Olson?
Excuse me, folks. Let's just one at a time here, because I'm trying to catch three people. We're mumbling here, and I think Senator Olson had the floor. So I want to make sure she gets done asking questions.
I'm finished. I think you got the gist of my question.
Senator Roebling.
Currently, clinics like where you would go to your regular family physician are not licensed, and they're not inspected. Only the physician is licensed, and the nurses who work there are licensed, but they are not licensed and inspected. But we are comparing, with this bill, abortion clinics similar to surgical centers, which are licensed and inspected. Okay. And when we got the description back from the Department of Health, they also made a similar comparison that this would be like the inspections and licensing that they do for the surgical centers.
Senator Goodwin.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, as Senator Roebling said, other physicians' offices are not do not have to be licensed. So the only thing that Senator Roebling's bill covers is just abortion clinics that do over ten or more. And my concern is that a vasectomy is every bit as intrusive of surgery as an abortion is, and that we need to protect both the patient and the patient's partner in making sure that maybe their diseases are checked for and that there's correct disposal of medical supplies used on that. And I don't see the difference, quite frankly. And I think one of the reasons we got this bill before us, and I'm not saying Senator Roebling is wanting this or thinking this way, but I think there are some groups that would like abortion clinics only to be licensed, because then they could find out where all those clinics are that do abortions, no matter what else they do, women's health care or sexual diseases or whatever. So. So then of course we know that once that's known where they are, then they're harassed. Women that go into those clinics are harassed, and I think let's make this equal. Let's not have it just for women. Let's have it for men's inspections too. So I think this is fair.
All right, here we go. Just so everyone knows, I did a Google search on vasectomy clinics. I found two, one in Chicago and one in Maryland. The only two listed in Google, but we're going to move to a vote. It's a straight up and down vote. All those in favor of a roll call has been requested and granted. Secretary will take the roll.
Senator Carlson?
No.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator Hayden?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
Senator Lilly?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres Ray?
Yes.
Senator Wieger?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
No. There being seven noes, four yeas, the amendment does not prevail. To the bill, Senator Torres Ray, to the section on rulemaking.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Roebling, I had a question about the review of the rules. This particular language alludes to the changes, and I want to know when the commissioner looks into adopting rules about the new changes. Do they have to do a review on existing for all clinics? Is this independent to clinics that perform abortions only? I'm not clear as to what the review of the rules will entail. Could you go over that a little bit? Because I just made a mess of my pile, so I don't have the fiscal note in front of me.
Senator Roebling.
Mr. Chair and Senator Torres Ray, there are no rules now because there are no regulations or licensing of abortion clinics. So they would be starting with a new rulemaking process, which would be my intent, and from the fiscal note that we received, it could be similar and based on the prototype that they currently have for the surgical centers that they license and regulate. So there is no rule, no licensing, no inspections, no regulations for abortion clinics at this time. The physician is licensed, and that's what it's based on. And, you know, we license tattoo parlors and lots of things, barbershops and many, many other things. And I just think it's strange that we have not ever regulated or licensed abortion clinics as well. And for the safety of women, I think it's an important issue because there have been instances, not necessarily that became very public in our state, but in other states where there have been some horrible conditions that have been discovered and women's health were seriously put at risk.
Thank you. Further discussion? Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a follow-up. So the rules that apply to surgical procedures are not sufficient for this procedure, and this will be a separate chapter that only applies to this particular procedure? Is that
Senator
because
Roebling.
We don't have separate chapters for different surgical procedures, so abortion will have an independent chapter in your view, or how would this work?
Senator Roebling.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, they don't fall under those rules now. They simply don't fall under those rules. So it would be a new chapter because maybe we could make a definition of abortion clinics so that they fit under the surgical centers, and then they would simply have the same rule in the same oversight and inspection and licensing. But at this point, they do not.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Senator Goodwin.
Well, that's not entirely true, Senator Roebling, because they have to comply with the standards of the College of Laboratory Accreditation, the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendments, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, as well as state and local building codes and fire codes. In addition to that, anybody that works in there, a physician or a nurse, also has to be licensed. So they really are much more like other health centers that you're not addressing in this bill, other clinics that you're not addressing in this bill that do surgical procedures. And most doctor's offices do surgical procedures, as well as urgent care centers and so on. So this isn't really needed, and unless you want to do all of them, and I know you don't want to do all of them because it would be much more controversial, but if you feel it's important that we're going to do this for women, then I think you better think about all the other procedures that are done in all the other doctor's offices as well, if you really do care about the health of women. So that's my last thought, and
let's thank you.
Get rid of this.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 1921 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, members.
Fourth item on the agenda is Senate File 1259, Senator Cruz. Special military and veterans license plates parking charge exemption. This bill was referred to us from the Committee on Transportation. Again, staff, Ms. James, could you take us to the part that we need to be focused on?
Mr. Chair and members, this is before our committee because it relates to the Capitol grounds, which is the jurisdiction of this committee.
Thank you very much. Senator Cruz, I understand you have an A4 amendment. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do. And I have
Senator Daley will move the A4 amendment to that amendment.
Well, actually, this is a delete-all amendment that we have in the Transportation Committee where this bill was first introduced. We had to work with some of the stakeholders, downtown Minneapolis, and work with some of the other folks. We had a much broader scope. We have trimmed that down to essentially get this legislation to only apply to the Capitol grounds, and we even take that a step further and only apply to metered spots. Essentially what the legislation does is allows our veterans who have veterans plates who can already park free of charge in these spaces to do so without having to go in and get a tag to do that, and strictly a convenience issue for our veterans. It was brought to me by one of my constituents who spoke about a couple of friends of his that, you know, were, obviously they were disabled, and it's uncomfortable for them to have to park, get out of the car, go in, get a tag, come back out to the car, put that tag in the window, and then go back into the veterans building to do their work that they came to do.
Any questions on the A4 amendment? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Any further discussion on the bill as amended? Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 1259 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to finance.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Olson.
We're just having a little conversation here. The truck bearing, is that the right form of the word bearing? Where is Senator Higgins bearing, teacher?
Yeah, Senator Higgins.
Should we need her?
What line is that on, Senator?
It's on the A4 amendment. It is 1.7. A one-ton pickup bearing?
I believe so.
It's not
B-A-R.
I thought.
Bearing special plates, not the metal. Yeah. Is it the right one?
Staff says it is correct.
Okay.
But they're rechecking, but they believe it's correct.
Remember the black bear.
We're going to move on to the sixth item on the agenda, Senate File 2117, Senator Brown. Legislative Commission on United Nations Agenda 21 Establishment.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator Brown. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have before us Senate File 2117. The purpose of this is to establish the Legislative Commission on the United Nations Agenda 21 to study the implementation of United Nations Agenda 21 by the state, counties, regional commissions, towns, and cities. Members, I printed this off from the United Nations website. This is United Nations Agenda 21. It is, and from their own description, Agenda 21 is a comprehensive plan of action to be taken globally, nationally, and locally by organizations of the United Nations system, governments, and major groups in every area in which human impacts on the environment. What I want to focus on with the establishment of this commission, members, is to look at the areas where Agenda 21 will have negative impacts on the lives of Minnesotans. And, Mr. Chair, I do have two testifiers here to give members a better idea of Agenda 21.
All right. Thank you very much, Senator Brown. Will you be going first, sir?
All right, sir.
Just state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
My name is Raleigh Nevy. I'm from Chanhassen, Minnesota, and I'm concerned about Agenda 21. It is a sustainable development thing that is initiated by the United Nations, and it will affect the lives of every person in the state of Minnesota, in the United States, and worldwide. Essentially, it gives the United Nations control over our environment. They call it sustainable development. And what the net effect of this is to take away our civil rights. It will promote mandated national service for youth, implementation of a universal lifelong education on sustainable development, control of the size of your family, cutting the amount of goods and services you buy and use. It virtually eliminates private ownership of property, denying you access to wildlands and things of that nature. So it is a very insidious plan to really take away our freedoms and undermine our constitutional rights that we have under the Bill of Rights.
Mr. Chairman?
And so it is I think it's a serious concern for everyone, and it should be exposed and defeated. And I would suggest that perhaps a resolution on part of the state of the legislature of the state of Minnesota be implemented to reject Agenda 21. and to defund any association that has happened so far.
All right. Thank you, sir. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this a provision that the United States is under by virtue of being a member of the United Nations, or is it something that has to be ratified by our federal government in order for it to be implemented here?
I think, go ahead.
Well, Senator Brown.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Olson, we are participating in this as a member of the United Nations. What I want the commission to do is look at the, not all areas of this are negative. I want to look at the areas of Agenda 21 and how it will affect Minnesotans negatively in the way we live our lives.
All right. Thank you very much. Our second testifier.
My name is Andrew Johnson. I'm from Mankato, Minnesota. And just a little bit of background, Agenda 21, as most of you probably know, began in Rio back in 1992 when they had the big convention there amongst 178 countries that signed on to Agenda 21. George Bush signed in on our behalf. And after his administration, President Clinton passed a type of document that gave it even more teeth in terms of the United States of America participating in Agenda 21. And as we see it, there is the – it's already taking effect. And I would reference you to what I guess is called the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. And I find that to be kind of somewhat humorous in a way, because you're talking about an international council telling us how to run our local government. Think about that for a moment. Okay? Agenda 21 has an awful lot to do with the environment, and that's the guise that makes it so popular, in my opinion. And, by the way, ICLEI is, I think, probably, if you look on the Google it and do it yourself, do your own research, you may find that to be well connected to Agenda 21. They are providing technology programs for computers to help carry through and carry forth environmental issues on what we're going to do with the property that we have here in Minnesota and also throughout the United States. I believe you each have perhaps been provided with a document whereby one county, I think it was in North or South Carolina, provided you a copy of that particular county government rejecting Agenda 21 after they looked into it. Let me say to you, Senators, they're not the only – that's not the only one. There are others that have looked into this matter and rejected it completely. If this thing carries forward, it's our concerned opinion that they will control the land use in the state of Minnesota insidiously through this – in particular, this ICLEI, of which the city of St. Paul and the city of Minneapolis and even the city of Mankato, from which I come, and Blue Earth County, in which I am located, is a dues-paying member. And if you take a look deeply at it, we ask you to at least look into it, and I think you'll draw the conclusion that this is not in our country's best interest and not in the interest of the state of Minnesota. Those are my comments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senators.
Thank you very much. Further discussion.
Well, Mr. I just want an acronym.
Yes.
You threw
Senator
a couple of acronyms out there. Could you – ICLEI, I see it printed here, but I have no idea what it stands for.
Well,
Mr. Johnson.
I don't know, or if you're a citizen. All right, Mr. Chair.
I just have to say your name so that they know who's going to be talking next for the record. Thank you.
Sorry. Yes, Andrew Johnson. That organization, again, is I don't know if you live in St. Paul or Minneapolis, but if you
– No.
Whatever.
I live on a farm.
You live on a farm?
She wanted to know
you'll want to have to read a lot more about what's going on.
Well, what does those initials stand for?
Okay, that stands for the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives.
Okay.
Right.
And if you look it up, you'll find that it's well connected with Agenda 21, which is a result of the United Nations having, by the way, the authority to implement their rules and regulations by a particular article, what is it, 103?
104.
104 is whereby the United Nations gets its authority to implement its rules upon countries that are signing on to any particular treaties or agreements with the United Nations. So we're here to caution you to look into this matter. Again, I will repeat, the city of St. Paul and the city of Minneapolis pay dues and are part of the ICLEI, as well as the city from which I come and the county from which I come, and many other cities in the state of Minnesota.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't paying close attention, but I do need to hear again the gentlemen that are testifying. I would like to know what agencies they represent. And also would like to know if they know if there is any other state, Senator Brown, that is pursuing similar legislation to the legislation that you're pursuing, if you could let us know.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Torres Ray. I can't name the specific states. There are several. I think there's 13. They have introduced either legislation for resolutions. They are much more strongly worded than what I am looking to do, and there are other states that have introduced similar legislation to set up commissions within their state to look at how parts of Agenda 21 are going to negatively impact residents of their states.
I believe also Senator Torres Ray asked if the testifiers were with any specific agency or here on their own behalf. Mr. Nevy?
Well, I am on my own behalf. I am very concerned about our obeying our Constitution. I am a member of the Tea Party in the Southwest Metro area. The thing that came to mind was what is happening in the state of California. And when these initiatives come forward, they are reporting requirements. And a lot of companies in the state of California, in an attempt to conform to the reporting requirements, even took courses on complying. They failed to report, however, and they were kind of like blindsided, and it, as a consequence, got hit with huge fines. And the net consequence of all of this that's happening in the state of California is that small businesses are being burdened with huge fines, and they are, as a consequence, moving out of the state of California. And there's a mass exodus happening because of this, one of which was I'm trying to think of the large social network moving out of the state. But that's what's happening is that once it's implemented, these fines happen and are a huge burden on the individual businesses. And, of course, in the state of California, they're moving out. And then that reduces the tax rate and the tax base of the state of California and throws them further into economic difficulties.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Johnson, would you like to answer Senator Torres Ray's question?
Certainly. I'm from Mankato, Minnesota, and I'm affiliated, I suppose you might say, with several different kinds of groups because I believe in giving back to the community. Of those, I'm a member of a board member of a Riverbend Center for Enterprise Facilitation. I also do, I have to admit, participate in the Tea Party. I believe in it, but I believe in its three core principles. I don't believe in a lot of other kinds of issues that come into play. I am not a Republican. I am not a Democrat. I also, for example, sit on the board of directors of Vine Faith and Action that does one heck of a lot of good down in my neck of the woods, particularly for the elderly. And I've been on the board for quite some time and have handled their negotiations because of my background in business. One quick point I want to add on to, if you don't mind, Senator, is that I just want to make certain that you folks are aware that there are places on the Internet that you can find maps such as these that will show you what the plan is in terms of having land that will be inaccessible to folks for the common good, for example, here in the state of Minnesota.
That's true.
And I would entertain any questions if you have about my Tea Party affiliation because I'm proud of it.
Thank you, Mr. Right. Johnson. Senator Hayden.
I have a follow-up question.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and gentlemen, this house is open for your input and your ideas. This is, you know, an important process that we engage in. Your comments were related to environmental issues and were quite strong as to what the agenda for the United Nations actually is. And I didn't hear anything related to to your background with regards to those issues. And I just want to, you know, I don't need a comment back. I just want to make sure that you know that I hesitate. I'm sure this is stopping in another committee where there is a clear jurisdiction over the issues that are relevant to this bill. But I very much hope, Senator Brown, that you will have witnesses that actually have worked in these issues in global terms, because this is what you're doing is very important. And the people that you bring before us speak to your credibility and to your knowledge of the issue. And so I just wanted to leave that comment for the record.
Senator Hayden.
Good. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't going to say much.
Thank you, Senator Hayden.
But, you know, I couldn't help as the gentleman continued to testify. Is there, Mr. Chair, just by way of process, is this, our Senator Brown, is there another stop for this?
Yes, sir, Senator. There would probably be two at least.
And where do we know where that's?
One will be finance and one will be
rules.
Well, because, I mean, I guess the premise of Agenda 21 and kind of the propaganda that's been given to us is that this is an environmental issue, and I know that we have environmental committees, and so I would wonder why that it wouldn't make a stop to make sure that we got a balanced opinion on what Agenda 21. I mean, I hadn't followed it as closely, clearly, as these gentlemen are, and the kind of alarming statements and the, you know, pending doom that will come of Agenda 21, I think needs to have a full hearing and talk about both sides of this issue. And so, you know, as with Senator Torres Reyes, I respect any citizen that wants to come and kind of inform the legislature and move these issues forward so that we understand what the future may hold. But Senator Brown, I will say that I think that it would have been even more of a help, at least to me, or depending upon the path, if we get a broader group of people that would like to talk about this issue. And as Senator Torres Reyes says, maybe those with a background that you know, and with all due respect to the testifiers, I don't mean this to be disrespectful, but, you know, we often get experts all around the table when we sit here that have a strong background in these issues, regardless to what side that they're on. And so I think before we kind of – I get a little nervous on the record when we get our testifiers to start to tell you what they predict is going to happen and what their party affiliation is and all the things that they think that we should do without hearing the other side of that, I think could be somewhat harmful and even reckless for our process. So I guess for me, Senator Brown, it would be to make sure that if you believe that this is something that we need to do, let's really sit down and talk about it, but let's talk about it in a fair and a balanced way.
Well, I thought maybe you were talking about the fiscal notes we got, Senator Hayden, because you accurately described what I think the fiscal notes are all about in your statement.
Mr. Chair, I would like to respond to that.
Senator Brown.
I appreciate Senator Hayden and Senator Torres Ray, you bringing that up, and that's exactly why I want to have a commission. The commission is structured bipartisanly, and it would be a vehicle where we can bring forth testimony from experts in the field to discuss these matters. That's exactly the reason why I want to set up this commission, is so that we can take an in-depth look at what Agenda 21 is and how it would affect Minnesotans. So I appreciate you highlighting that.
Senator Hayden.
I guess what I'm saying is that I appreciate that, and that's what the bill does, that's what we should do. But I often think that when we kind of bring other people with us and they have one particular side of the opinion, it starts to tilt it a little bit. And so I think that, you know, as much as I respect our citizens coming up in the People's House to talk about their opinions on issues, I always look for, as I put that group together, to make sure that the other side, or maybe people that have competing, because these gentlemen have very, very clear understanding of what they think is going to happen with Agenda 21, but we don't really have folks are facilitating the way in which folks who maybe have a different opinion are here. And maybe that's not your job, but that would have been nice to hear today, or to make it a stop in the Environment Committee where then we can get others to talk about.
Senator Artman.
Well, Mr. Chair, I've made this point before. This bill was on an agenda that was made public. The general public, including those that support an agenda like this or support what's happening in the United Nations, had every reason to come, learn about the bill, see what was being proposed by Senator Brown and the advocates here. or even the senators here could have advised somebody else to say, look at this, what do you think? Is there some problem with this? But Senator Brown has fairly introduced legislation to establish a commission to study something that some residents are concerned about and would like to get more information about. That's our role. I think that is our role at the state legislature, to say there are some residents who would like to learn more about this and want to know about the application in our local communities and at the state level. I think it's perfectly appropriate. I think the testifiers here are very thoughtful to be here today to help us understand that residents have questions about this. It's a very good approach, and I appreciate Senator Brown's comments and the comments of the testifiers today. I would move the bill.
Well, to that point, Mr. Chair, I mean,
it does deal
with environment. It is an environmental issue, and it doesn't look like it's got to stop in the
We don't know yet, Senator Hayden. I do know it's going to have two stops, finance and rules. And one of those committees, I'm sure, will do that. But the next stop for this bill out of this committee will be finance. And that's where that's going to go. And then from finance, I'm sure it will go to rules. If, in fact, at that point, they decide that the chairman decides that he thinks he needs to hear this based on the establishment. Don't forget, all we're doing is putting together a commission here to start a process. And I understand what you're saying, but it's not all just about the environment, even though our testifiers mentioned that. There's others in this. So we're gonna move forward on this bill. Senator Wigger, very shortly.
Very briefly.
I thought you were.
Oh, correct. Excuse me, Senator Olson. my fault.
Thank you, Senator Perry. I just wanted to state that I respect the openness that our testifiers have had in terms of sharing what their concerns are and positions. And, you know, we in the legislature, we are a citizen legislature. And one of the things that I appreciate, I hope it never becomes a body that is just has nothing but politicians on it. People come with different life experience, and when we're talking about an imposed agenda that can have impact on lives in different ways, whether it's local units of government, some of us have served in local units of government, whether we've worked in education. It was an environmental issue that got me going into politics in the first place when somebody was a neighboring town was going to dump sewage in the lake that was on our land as a settling pond because that was the cheapest thing to do. We are concerned about our environment, but who should be the ones making the rules and making and working to preserve that but those who are actively a part of and are affected by it? And that's why I think when we push it, not only I get concerned when we push issues nationally that should be kept at the state and local level, and now we're talking international dictation on it. So I think it's well worthy, and I think you're taking a very measured step in terms of examining this and bringing back more information so that a citizen legislature can make some decisions that are in the interest of the people of the state.
Senator Wigger.
Chairman, just very briefly, there's a great deal of criticism in the handout about sustainable development, and we ask for more information so our communities know. Well, Maplewood, part of my district, they're very proud of a very comprehensive plan they've done on sustainable development, and it's a very bipartisan, tripartisan effort there where they've worked and with neighborhood groups, and no one has come forward with the concern about the United Nations that we put a stop to what some communities are doing. I think, it's fine for the discussion, to look at $500,000 for an appropriation potentially to look at international discussions at the United Nations is not needed at this time.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 2117 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Finance.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
No.
Motion does prevail. Thank you, testifiers, for coming, and Senator Brown, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Fifth item on the agenda is Senate File 1957, Senator Nelson. This is Employment and Economic Development Department Deeds Permit Management and Coordination Requirements. This bill was referred to us from the Committee on Jobs and Economic Growth. Again, I'll ask Senate Counsel to take us to the point of the bill that is under our purview.
Mr. Chairman?
Excuse me. Waiting for Senate Counsel to take us to where we need to go on this.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm looking for a copy of the bill. Thank you. This bill relates to permits that involve multiple state agencies, situations where multiple state agencies are involved.
All right, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And committee members, thank you for allowing me to present Senate File 1957. Well, you will notice that this is a short bill, about 16 lines, so it's easy to find the relevant parts. Much shorter than the Vikings bill that I'm in the middle of hearing right now down in local gov.
That's only 87 pages, Senator Nelson.
This is much shorter, Mr. Chair and committee members. Senate File 1957 actually is born out of, I know, experience in my district, and I've heard from many of you the very same thing.
Yeah.
And that is that business owners and job creators are being stifled by sometimes overlapping, duplicitous, and slow permitting process. This bill simply sets up a permit management and coordination, and it provides that the permits involving more than one state or federal agency would be managed and coordinated by the state agency that has the primary jurisdiction in permitting the project. If it's uncertain who that agency is, who the primary agency is, it would require that the Bureau of Business License determines that responsible agency when no one is clearly responsible. And there are four things that this bill would do that would be helpful to getting more business expansion and job creators. One, it would require that primary agency develop a timeline for all permits and coordinate the permits among agencies. Two, it would provide that the project proposer got the timeline for all of those permits. Thirdly, the agency with the primary jurisdiction would serve as the contact person for that project proposer. And lastly, it would make the permit applications and the supporting documents available electronically in a centralized location for agencies involved in permitting the project. That would allow various agencies to work on the project at the same time. Right now, we are operating in an old system. Files have to be worked on in one department and then hand-carried to another department. This allows for better efficiency in allowing all of the departments to access the permits at the same time. Mr. Chair, I have a testifier, if I might bring him forward.
That would be great, Senator Nelson, if you could come forward.
Thank you.
You could identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I will be brief. I know times are short, and it is committee deadline week, but thank you again for allowing me to comment. One of the things we hear at the chamber, as Senator Nelson has pointed out, besides when people are looking to expand or locate a new facility here in the state, is when they look at taxes, they look at energy costs, they work at workforce development. But one of the things they also look at is how long it would take to get a permit, how much it would cost, and the certainty after going through that permitting process. And the chamber is willing to work with anyone or anybody that has any ideas at all, Mr. Chairman and members, to try and speed up that process. And as Senator Nelson has said, bring it into the 21st century. The commissioner of PCA also makes reference, as well as the governor, to trying to get the state agencies to operate at the speed of commerce. We've all heard that. And there is no silver bullet out there, but we think this is a good stop to way to go through. The administration has also started and has done a good job of starting Minnesota Business First Stop. We think this will work good in coordination with that. And, Mr. Chairman, with that, thank you for the time to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. Just looking around in the audience, are there any other members in the audience who would like to testify either in support or not in support of this? Members, any questions? Senator Olson.
I would move that Senate File 1957 be recommended to pass.
To the motion members, those in...
It hasn't been amended. It's going.
Mm-hmm. It hasn't been amended.
And Mr. Chair, might it need to go to... I think that's it. Yeah, just recommend it to pass.
I think Senator Olson said she'd like to see it pass and be referred to Finance. She's nodding her head yes.
Words right into my mouth.
Yes. Members, to the motion, those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you, Senator Nelson.
Seventh item on the agenda is Senate File 1945, Senator Gazelka, wolf hunting and trapping authorization. This bill came to us from the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. Ms. James, would you take us to the point of the bill that we need to take a look at?
Mr. Chair and members, begin on page 9, beginning on line 20, and also beginning on line 28, there is rulemaking.
Could you repeat that,
Ms. James? What number? On page 9, section 22 that begins on line 20, and section 23 that begins on line 28. Involve rulemaking.
You'll be in the packet.
1945.
Then there's an amendment.
That says 933.
Have you found it? I have 9.20, and then it'll take us all the way through 9.33, I believe. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, and on to the next page, down through 10.27.
Oh, and on page 10, down to 10.27. All right, Senator Gazelka, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, in a nutshell, the wolves were delisted from the federal government and brought into the care of the state in January of this year. We are moving forward with a hunting and trapping season for the timber wolves. This was heard in the Environment Committee. We've given authority to the DNR in most areas as far as quotas and how to trap them, and partially as far as when the seasons are to begin and end.
Does this have anything to do with the two-legged timber wolves, Senator Gazelka?
No, and I just watched them last week, Mr. Chair. But this—that's the metro version. This is the wild version. So I know the DNR is here and can comment on the rules, Mr. Chair. But it did pass unanimously off the Environment Committee. The DNR is—I probably should make their comments as well.
Senator Gazelka, was there any thought given to sunsetting these rules? Because you know how aggressive I am at trying to take rulemaking authority away from the agencies, because I think most of them have been overstepping their bounds, and that's just my feeling. And so I was wondering if that is something you've entertained.
Mr. Chair, I'd rather not in this particular bill. One of the things we're doing is we're going to start a wolf season that coincides with the beginning of deer hunting rifle season. And then they're going to set another season in December, probably late December, that will have some hunting and perhaps, or trapping and perhaps hunting as well. We're trying to measure the different ways that are most effective to manage the wolf. Out in Montana, for example, they buy over-the-counter tags and roughly kill about 1% of, you know, if you had 50,000 tags, they'd kill 5,000 or 500. But and so we want to have a few, and actually I intend to come back next year with another bill based on the data we have, and at that time that would probably be worthwhile. But at this point we're gathering data, and we're going to have to make new decisions next year anyway.
Would you like to move your A2 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the A2 amendment.
Discussion on the A2 amendment.
Mr. Chair, this is more housekeeping than anything, lining up with the House language. I believe it came from the DNR as well, and I'm in support of it.
So, Mr.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, you're moving out of the wolves and into the fishing. With the trout, this rulemaking is on trout seasons.
Mr. Chair.
That's the House work.
Excuse me. Ms. James, would you explain that?
Mr. Chair and members, the new Section 20, Section 20, the changes that are made to Minnesota statute Section 97B.671 say that fees are not subject to rulemaking provisions, and that's on line 1.9, and so that makes this section the purview of this committee. And then beginning on line 1.12 of the amendment, it relates to rulemaking for trout seasons, so also rulemaking.
Mr. Chair, if
Senator Gizelka,
can I give some reasons here? I think it'd be helpful.
Please state your name and you may proceed.
Mr. Chair, Greg Knapp, Senate Counsel and Research and Fiscal Analysis. And Mr. Chair, what these are two provisions that are also contained in the Game and Fish Bill. They were requested by the DNR. And in going through that bill, realizing that that bill was sent to the Finance Committee and not, well, actually sent to the Judiciary and not to here, the thought was that that this bill then could be amended with these provisions on, the rulemaking provisions that this committee needs to oversee into the Wolf Bill. And also the Wolf Bill, the contents of the Wolf Bill are also in the Game and Fish Bill, so that these two provisions could be seen before this committee rather than sending the whole Game and Fish Bill here.
All right, thank you. Further discussion on the A2 amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. We're back to the bill. Any discussion, further discussion? I'll take you on your word, Senator DeGazelka. You'll come back and put a sunset on that, so we don't have to do it today, but I think we have to start looking at that with any new rulemaking authority that comes forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If there's no other questions, I'd like to move Senate File 1945. I'm not sure where it's going.
As amended.
Finance.
As amended.
Excuse me. Are there any testifiers for or against? If you are, please. I see my apologies for not asking. We do have someone here that would like to come and testify. Yes, ma'am. Pull the chair up and get close to the microphone and please state your name for the record.
Trying to get comfortable. My name is Sandra Skinaway. I'm the chairwoman of the Sandy Lake Band in Mississippi Chippewa in McGregor, Minnesota.
Please proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members of this committee, my name is Sandra Skinaway, and I am chairwoman of the Sandy Lake Band in Mississippi Chippewa. Miigwech. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on Senate File number 1945. On behalf of the Sandy Lake Band in Mississippi Chippewa, I'm here today to place on public record that we are opposed to the public taking of the wolf in Minnesota. The wolf holds a special and sacred place in the Anishinaabe culture, and we have to try our best to protect them and to speak for them since they don't have a voice. In the Anishinaabe creation story, we are taught that Mayingen, wolf, is brother to original man, which was Anishinaabe, and the two traveled together throughout the earth, naming everything. Once this task was completed, the creator told the wolf and original man that they had to now take separate paths, but said that whatever happened to one would happen to the other. And that each would be respected, feared, and misunderstood by the people that would later join them on Earth. Because of that relationship, the health and survival of the Anishinaabe people is tied to that of the wolf. The recovery of the wolf in Minnesota represents success and a cultural awakening in the Anishinaabe culture. This proof is seen in the current struggles of today, such as those Anishinaabe who are opposing environmental threats to our natural resources and to our wild rice, which we call Monomen. But we are not the only people opposing these environmental threats. The wolf was removed from the endangered species list on December 28, 2011, which is only 77 days ago. And already the state wants to allow the killing of the wolf. This bill and the two other bills in this legislature are in a full-scale rush to enact laws to do just that. And why? Is it for the money for the state? By allowing a public harvest of the wolf, the state is putting a bounty on the wolf similar to the cruel, harsh reality of what happened to the buffalo, trumpeter swan, and other species that have now gone extinct and nearly became extinct. I hate to mention also that bounty on the indigenous people of this land was also a harsh reality, but it had to be mentioned. I understand and respect the concerns that the ranchers and farmers have for their livestock and their way of life. But they also need to understand and respect our way of life and our culture of the Anishinaabe people. I also understand the concerns of other citizens who fear for their domestic pets, but our pets are also killed by other domestic animals, by people, and by vehicles. People usually kill animals through animal cruelty or abuse. Domestic pets are also often killed because they are either a nuisance or on other people's properties. Personally, I've had two of my domestic pets killed by at least two of the above-named incidents. The point is, the wolf is not the only species that kill domestic animals and should not be one of the reasons for the public killing of the wolf. There should also be the matter of treaty rights to consider here. The tribes in the ceded territories can legally lay claim to half the harvest. That, in particular, I'm referring to the Treaty of 1855. The ceded territory, which represents a vast area of the kill zones here in Minnesota. The wolf has been here since time immemorial. There was never a need to establish hunting seasons of the wolf before, so why start now? Mayungan, the wolf, well determined its own natural balance, as it always has. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for our testifier? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I can just make one more comment, too. Thank you. The DNR is setting the quota, and they are very cautious in their number. I think they're going to be around 6,000. If we correlate that to what happened out in Montana, it was 1%. You know, so it's a very small number that, you know, they, even if they miscalculate by quite a bit, and they're doing that intentionally because they have no desire to wipe out the wolf. It's meant to be part of their management program.
All right, thank you. Any further questions? Senator Gazelka. Senator Gazelka renews his motion that Senate file 1945 be recommended to pass and re-referred as amended and re-referred to finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Gazelka. Okay. All right, we're going to move on to the ninth item on the agenda, which is Senate File 230. Senator Gerlach. Nurse Licensure Compact. This bill was first went through Health and Human Services and was sent to us after passing out of the Committee of Finance. Ms. James, would you take us to the location that we're directly looking at?
Mr. Chair and members, on page 10, line 22, section 5 establishes a committee, a Nurse Licensure Compact Advisory Committee.
All right, members, we are going to focus on page 10, and it is section 5, which starts at line 1022 and goes through the bottom of the page, 1033. Welcome, Senator Gerlach. You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'll just tell you so you understand the concept. The Nurse Licensure Compact is a bill that I am carrying to have Minnesota enter into what is now a 24-state compact to allow for nurses with licensure to be able to practice, have some mobility and practice in other states. There are sort of other layers of these types of things going on with other states. There's border state agreements. There are some things in existence with other surrounding states. But this is a this solves a lot of problems, and we've heard this in great detail in the Health Committee. There is one section, which is why it's before you here, and that is the advisory committee. This is a committee that is unlike normal boards and commissions that would come before you, because this is to essentially advise another board, so it's two layers deep, and that would be the Board of Nursing. And it was an optional sort of enabling language. See, if you're going to enter into a compact, it has to be the same as all the other states that you're entering into this agreement with. But this is one of those optional pieces of the bill that I opted for because I thought it was a good idea to be able to have some of this, some of the folks, the stakeholders, to be able to be involved with the Board of Nursing and how this would be implemented should it become law. That is Section 5 of the bill. And I have somebody with me here from the Board of Nursing who can also speak to this section of the bill.
Getting in combat.
All right. Thank you very much. You may state your name and proceed.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Renee Cronquist, and I am the Director for Practice and Policy of the Minnesota Board of Nursing. And I'm here to address just that Section 5 of Senate File 230, which creates an advisory committee for the board. The purpose of this advisory committee is to help the board develop and disseminate educational materials regarding the change in licensure model prior to implementation of the Nurse Licensure Compact. The board is seeking to be inclusive of the nursing community and to tap into the collective knowledge of nurses in practice and in leadership roles to ensure pervasive familiarity and a greater understanding of the Nurse Licensure Compact to ensure a smooth transition. It's my understanding that it's helpful to address some questions prior to creation of a new advisory committee, and I am prepared to address those questions if it's the desire of the committee.
Thank you very much. Do we have questions, comments from the committee? Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair and members, I just want to note that on that piece that you have of all the supporters of this, Minnesota Nurses Association is not a supporter of this legislation.
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Any further discussion? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that Senate File 230 be recommended to pass.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hayden.
I do think we have someone from the Nurses Association that wanted to.
All right. I didn't have it down here. Is there anyone that would like to testify? Please come forward.
Hello again. Hello again. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carrie Mortrude, and I'm a public policy and governmental affairs specialist with the Minnesota Nurses Association. And we do oppose the Nurse Licensure Compact for multiple reasons: potential job loss, patient safety, and states' rights, that the state of Minnesota is giving up rights to regulate nursing here, because it is our understanding that once you join the compact, it is the compact administrators that determine what practice should look like. So even though the nurse is responsible to know and understand our Nurse Practice Act, it also puts them at potential risk for knowing all states that they might be licensed in. So when you join the compact and have a multi-state license, it is up to the nurse to know all of the Nurse Practice Acts and any rules or laws that apply to them in that state, potentially setting you up that you would be responsible to know all 24 states' Nurse Practice Acts as well as any other rules and laws that apply. So we feel firmly that this is not the road we need to go down. We understand that there's issues and concerns around healthcare changing and that we need to work on telenursing or telemedicine for nurses, and we'd be more than happy to engage in that discussion. But we do not feel that this is the right road for Minnesota.
Further discussion? On Senator Carlson's motion to move Senate File 230 be recommended to pass, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Gerlach. We are now at the eighth item on the agenda, which is Senate File 933, Senator Daley. Back Office Consolidation Act. Members, as you will remember, we heard this bill earlier in committee, and it was re-referred to the Subcommittee on Reform and Redesign. We have received recommendations from that subcommittee. Senator Daley, would you like to discuss how the bill has changed since we last saw it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, we did receive a unanimous vote at the conclusion of that last meeting and a request by Senators Rest and Bonoff to have their names added to the bill. Those members on that subcommittee include Chairman Sean Nienau, Senators Benson, Bonoff, Carlson, Daley, DeKreif, Dietzick, Eaton, Gazelka, Nelson, Rest, and Sharon. And I would like to do just a brief shout-out to Senate Counsel Stephanie James. At 9 o'clock on the night before one of the meetings, I was on the phone with her, and she was still here in the Capitol. So thank you for all the great efforts that you put into it, and at the same time, all the Senate staff, everyone. We really appreciate all the hard work that you do to help us be successful here. Mr. Chairman, in coordinating this initiative with the Department of Administration officials, as well as consultants who advise large enterprises, including state governments and private sector businesses, we've modified the phasing of this effort. So rather than begin with moving control of all the back office functions to the Department of Admin, we're instead starting this initiative with the benchmarking study. By November 1st, 2012, we'll receive a prioritized ranking of the improvement initiatives. And by January 15th, 2013, Department of Admin must report to the chairs and ranking minority members a plan for implementing the improvement initiatives in the benchmarking report, as well as draft legislation that is required to implement the improvements. Just one little thing that was not resolved in the subcommittee, and that is, where do we find the money? So since that meeting 12 days ago, and since this isn't a budget year, it's a bit of a challenge to find the money, and I would ask members that I suggest to members I am working on that. We haven't completely resolved it. This bill will move to finance, and I am confident by the time it moves to finance, we'll have resolved the funding of this initiative.
All right. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Chair Perry for starting the subcommittee, and thank Senator Daley and staff. We went through 3 weeks of subcommittee hearings on this, and there was a number of times I talked to a Senator Daley and said, Senator Daley, I'm not ready to commit to this bill yet, as I think other members did. And it was through the work of that subcommittee. I went home that final Friday. I went home to my wife and I said, honey, I witnessed government really working this week. And where we came together, different ideas and different philosophies, we all came together with commissioners of departments. And at the end, it was a resounding, this ended up being a good idea and a good bill. And I would just recommend that we pass this. And thank Senator Daley for all your work on this.
Thank you, Senator Carlson.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Welcome, Senator Cohen.
I had a couple of meetings. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator, I just like to just make you smile a little bit. That's why I had to say that, because you are duly missed when you're at other meetings. And
I'm sorry I missed the discussion on Agenda 21.
You would have loved that, Senator Cohen. And I am so – we were looking for you, but they told us we couldn't pull you out of your meeting, Senator.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I support the bill. I appreciate the work Senator Daley has done this. I just wish once he would thank me for my efforts here.
Senator Daley, if you would like to thank him for his brevity, please do.
That was great.
Let's not go too far.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Hearing none, Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 933 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, we have nothing further, so you can take tonight's meeting off your calendar. However, I might let you know that I believe we're going to be hearing bills at 10 o'clock on Friday.
Night?
if you would like, no. I mean, no. No, it'd be 10 a.m. on Friday, and we will, we're going to see what's being re-referred to us, but I do know there are some bills out there that we need to take a look at 10 o'clock. So with that, being there's no further, Senator Ortman.
The Judiciary Committee is meeting from 9 to 2, so some of us may have to be in two places at once.
Correct. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, and jobs
Senator
is meeting
Torres,
as well.
Right. So. All right. Maybe we should do a try meeting and get it all done.
Friday's going to be a busy day.
If we'll take a look at it. Depending on the bills, if we do need to move it one way or the other, we'll do that as well. So, yes, the big thing would be stopping in for a quorum so we can move things. So without there being any further to do, this committee is adjourned.